I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast. Today, I'm with editorial page editor Paul Choinier of The Day, and we are going to talk about the first 100 days of Joe Biden's presidency. First, Paul, there's some breaking news this morning in The Day about the Coast Guard Academy. What does that do for the city of New London?
Well, I always think it's very exciting when the president decides to give the address at the Coast Guard graduation at the academy. They rotate. The vice president comes different years, members of the cabinet, but there's obviously also always a higher level of interest when it's the president. And so I think it'll be a lot of excitement to see President Biden here. I hopefully has something of substance to say. The presidential appearances usually tend to be more ceremonial and congratulatory of the Coast Guard, which is important, but occasionally they make some news. Hopefully this appearance will be making news.
Now, I know there's limited attendance there. Does the editorial page editor get an invite?
Well, we've gotten invites other years. Last year, of course, was very different. We shall wait and see, but it would be interesting to go.
Okay, and now on to the first 100 days in office. We heard President Biden speak last week. I wonder your general thoughts on his speech and whether you thought he instilled the confidence and made the unifying remarks that the country really needs right now.
You know, I think we're in an era now where the presidential addresses don't have the same importance that they once had, in that invariably what they have to say is going to be chopped up in snippets and consumed in various ways and social media and such. And people just have so many options now that what they can do with their evenings as far as viewing and such, where, you know, back in the day there were three networks and they all put on the presidential address. So I think you got much larger numbers, which doesn't mean they're not important. I think they're just consumed in a different way by the public. And I think in that regard, President Biden did well because he was careful to highlight the things he wanted to highlight that will then be repeated. He has this way of also often going almost down to a whisper when he gives these addresses, and it almost invites you to lean in. Oh, this must be something very personal, something very important. And I thought he used that effectively. I think the surprise for me in his first 100 days is just how aggressive he's been policy-wise and how progressive he's been with you know, big government programs. He sort of ran like the moderate in the field, but he's kind of governing in an LBJ, a Franklin Roosevelt manner so far.
Yeah, that brings me to the question of all the plans that Biden has announced, $6 trillion worth of plans. Are they achievable in this environment, and are they good for our country?
I think one thing, it would seem that President Biden learned something from his time in the Obama administration as vice president, in that if you recall, like Biden, President Obama came into office in the midst of a crisis, and that crisis was the Great Recession that we were in the midst of. We had markets had collapsed dramatically. We were fearful of it, whether we'd pitch into a Great Depression. So it was arguably a different crisis, but all as serious as the pandemic that President Biden now deals with. President Obama tried very hard to sort of moderate his proposals on a relief plan coming out of the Great Recession. it was much smaller than he originally pushed for because he was trying to accommodate Republicans. He had run on saying we can pull together. And he ended up paring it down quite a bit and never got the Republican support anyway. So, you know, he accommodated without a real victory. And it appears to me President Biden, having experienced that in that administration, was not going to make that mistake. So he has gone big. He went big with the American Rescue Plan. And now we have the family plan and we have the infrastructure bill. And yeah, you total them all together, they're $6 trillion. Given how narrow the Democratic majorities are in the House and particularly the Senate, 50-50, and the Democrats cannot be any more progressive than is Senator Manchin in West Virginia, because without his vote, they don't even get, you know, to the 50 and give Vice President Kamala Harris a chance to break the tie. So, no, I don't think these plans in the end will be quite as big on the infrastructure bill and kind of the family plan that the president might be pushing for. But I do think they could be very substantial. And I don't think it'll be compromises with the Republicans that'll get there. It'll be winning over Senator Manchin and some other more centrists within the Democratic ranks. In the end, they're polling very popular with the public, and I think it shows more than maybe some of us observe politics realize there has been a fundamental shift. The country is more open to government spending and big government solutions that maybe we've appreciated. And sort of the Reagan era, I think has closed, and we're kind of in a new era as the political winds change.
Yeah, and sometimes I see from the conservative side claims of socialism and the end of the country as we know it.
I do see a danger. I think the claim of socialists, the sky is falling, that's going to fall pretty flat with large segments of the population. I mean, it will play well to the Republican base. Certainly the strong base that supported Trump continues to do so. They'll buy into that socialist rhetoric, but the polling suggests that many Americans will not. You know, they seem to have recognized that we've sort of spent much of the last four decades saying, oh, you know, we have to cut taxes. If we cut taxes, it'll spur economic growth, and it'll help, and this increase in growth in the economy will trickle down and lift up everyone. And a lot of lower class, middle class, working class Americans have said, I'm still waiting for it to trickle down. I'm pretty much treading water. I really haven't seen much growth. So I think there is an openness to say, you know, yeah, I would like more money to go into infrastructure and investing and building up. I would like job training programs to give, if not me, maybe my kids an opportunity to retrain and prepare for the jobs tomorrow. Yeah, 2 years of free community college, and maybe my kid can then transfer to four-year college and not be so seriously in debt. I think all these things are resonating with the people. That, you know, that being said, it does at some point have to be paid for. And I sometimes think we're kind of centrist to the editorial board. That's a tradition we've held through different administrations. And national deficits are something to be concerned about. The trends now, if nothing changes and these kind of programs are enacted, you're looking at the national debt growing to 100 70% in 10, 12 years of the gross domestic product. That cannot be healthy. That'll eventually starve out funding for the economy and such, and could spark inflation. So you're going to need the tax increases to at least kind of erode into that. And we criticize the Republicans when they dramatically cut taxes, mostly on wealthy incomes, and there was no offsetting spending cuts. Those two create big deficits, and we sort of feel the same with the Democrats now. If there's going to be these big spending programs, there needs to be some method to pay for them. And we feel the proposed, by and large, the proposed tax increases that Biden is pushing do make sense. But to be healthy, you do need that balance. And I guess what we fear that in seeking compromises, the compromise might be, okay, we won't raise taxes to pick up some Republican votes. And I think that would hurt the country in the long term.
Okay. And congratulations, because you went 8 minutes into this podcast without mentioning Trump. Though the difference is obvious in what we're seeing now. How do you think the world is now looking at us in terms of our commander-in-chief, and is there a threat with China?
I think I mentioned Trump supporters, so I don't know if that counts. On foreign policy, I think China is going to be the new world power that we will be in competition with. That was, for much of the 20th century, obviously, Russia and communism. And, you know, Russia is still a nation to be concerned about. They've drifted back towards dictatorial-type government, which is very distressing. And they have a large nuclear arsenal, and they can definitely create problems. But I think as far as global power, you know, their economy is not terribly, terribly strong. China will grow. And I think, you know, that'll be our competitor. And they've shown some militaristic tendencies increasingly of late, as far as the South China Sea and the protecting their turf. And there's always the potential they could get aggressive with Taiwan and go in there, and you know, they claim that should be part of their country, and we have an agreement to defend Taiwan. So that, you know, that will be an ongoing challenge for this president and any future president. But I would suspect the Biden administration, just to be smarter about it than the President Trump administration, which seemed very uneven, at times praising China and then at other times launching these big trade wars. So I'd hope to see a more consistent strategy towards China.
And with our immigration policy, do you see any big change and movement here under the Biden administration?
Not yet. And I think that's by design. Biden is... I believe he's the oldest president, certainly oldest when he got elected. But with that, he also has a wealth of political experience. And not that he doesn't consider the immigration issue very important. I'm sure he does. But he also knows it's highly controversial. So I think he's smart politically in focusing in the short term on those issues where he feels the American public is behind, that are less controversial. Some of the things we touched about to help working people of all demographics. So he's starting there, and I think he'd like probably to get some victories in that regard and then move towards immigration. But I do not, he can only buy so much time, because some of those groups are very important in his winning election. And I don't think they're going to, the patience will only go so long that they want to see some genuine reforms. it would seem you could find a path to a comprehensive immigration policy where people who have been living in this country for some time now, who may have, you know, entered here outside of the immigration laws, but otherwise have been productive residents, could find some path to legal status and even a citizenship. There's a lot of support for the Dreamers, you know, the children who came here, whose parents brought them here. That's popular to give them a path to legal status. I think, you know, that has a broad support. And I think it will have to be combined, though, with some sensible policy for border control and to limit the influx of people coming in. And that's sort of the grand compromise. President George W. Bush tried there, couldn't get there. You know, so did, to a lesser degree, President Obama. We still think there should be some a path to get there. And as you have eased the rhetoric that kind of created this us against them feeling, which we found very distressful, with a different tone in the Biden administration, you know, we're hoping that will be possible. But I think you'll probably see that in the second year rather than a first year initiative.
Okay. And as we wrap up, Paul, do you want to make any predictions about the 4 years to come and the Biden-Harris team?
Boy, it is, you know, you could lose a lot of money trying to predict what's going to happen in 4 years of a presidency. If not, I think there's a very high possibility that if not for a pandemic, we'd be still talking about a President Trump. Who could have predicted that would happen? So it's tough to predict what goes ahead. I think what probably President Biden also learned is how critical that off-year election will be. If he cannot maintain Congress, then his ability to get things done in the second half of this term is greatly diminished. I think that's another reason he's trying to pick those avenues of policy where he can build some broad support, where he can peel off some Republican votes, get big votes from the unaffiliated voters. Some of the issues he's helping with the child tax credits and stuff. The Democrats can run on some of these things. If he doesn't get his full infrastructure plan, they can run and say, we need to do more in the infrastructure. So I think he's trying to build those issues rather than be divisive, that can be unifying, that Democrats can then run on. Then they can maintain control of Congress. And that'll be so key to how successful that first term is. Also, in the second half of the Biden presidency will be, he's an older man. Will at some point he's handing the party off to kind of a next generation, which would immediately make Vice President Harris the lead candidate. And we'd have a very strong possibility of talking about the first woman president, who many of us thought would be Hillary Clinton. Another prediction, another warning not to predict too far ahead. So it's going to be a fascinating 4 years. It always is. The Trump support remains very strong. And how that plays out on the Republican side will have another factor on these 4 years. So, you know, I hope we probably shouldn't wait 4 years to talk again and keep assessing how this plays out. But the first 100 days, I think, if you were a Democrat and you were concerned how it would go, you've got to be very encouraged that it was a strong start for the president.
Excellent, Paul. Thanks for the great analysis, and we will have you back way before the 4 years.
All right. Thank you very much, Karen.
This is Managing Editor Izaskun Larrañeta, and I want to thank you for listening to today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Now, here's the deal. What we do is not free. When you subscribe to The Day, you are supporting local journalists who care about the community just as much as you do. They work tirelessly to uncover what's going on in the city or town you live in. They cover moments of joy and sadness. And during these crazy, historic times, we need your support to continue to cover the stories that you care about. Please consider a subscription to The Day by visiting theday.com/subscribe. Thank you.